Can I tell you a funny thing that happened to me on TV once? So years ago, I was on CNN Headline News. So HLN, if you remember, there was a network called HLN that they shut down a couple years ago. And I was an anchor of a show called The Daily Share. The whole like idea of The Daily Share was like to try and make a transition to like more, honestly, streaming stuff. Like they were a little bit ahead of their time, but they wanted like YouTube stars on and like people that were making a name for themselves online. Edward Snowden, the whole stuff had just gone out with Edward Snowden. And we were going to have a guest on to talk about it. And you would think that if someone has a handle at fart, they might have different intentions. So our booking team booked at fart to be an expert or a commentator on Ed Snowden. And so I had like my IFB in my ear, which is like the earpiece that goes in your ear so you can like hear your interviewer. And for some reason, there was like a lot going on in my ear that day. I don't know if there was something going on in the control room or whatever, but they were like talking to my ear. So like whenever he would answer, I couldn't hear his answers. And I would ask, he'd ask him questions. Then she would be talking to me in my ear while he was answering the questions. And then suddenly I heard scissor hands.
Is classified information out there that was released that could have harmed people? Do you think Snowden's actions were worth that risk?
Well, you know, to say that he couldn't harm somebody, you know, with what he did, like he could, absolutely he could have. But I think to cast him out to make him invalid in society, simply because he has scissors for hands. I mean, that's so strange because, I mean, people didn't get scared until he started sculpting shrubs into dinosaur shapes and whatnot.
And so I asked him like one more question and then I like rapped and then I'm like, okay, we got to go. And then my boss comes in my office like later on. He's like, what the hell happened? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, have you looked online? I'm like, what? He's like, it's gone viral. I'm like, what's gone viral? He's like, you just interviewed someone about Edward Scissorhands.
Some people say it's hypocritical that Snowden has asylum in Russia. Russia has a lot of human rights violations.
Well, yeah, casting him out is just completely wrong. Just because he was created on top of a mountain by Vincent Price and incomplete with scissors for hands and no heart, Edward Scissorhands is a complete hero to me.
But what about the choice that he made to live in a country like Russia?
I mean, where else is he going to go? You know, we cast him out. Like, we got scared when he poked a hole in a waterbed with his scissor finger. Like, that was just unreasonable of us.
Well, John, I appreciate you giving us your opinion.
Sounds like a good prank, to be honest. One that we'd be envious of.
Oh, my gosh. I thought my career, I was like, I'm done. I drank like an entire bottle of wine that night. I was like, it's over.
The good liars.
This is boring. We're boring.
I will die standing in my boots.
Herschel, I got you some condoms.
What made everyone so weird and sad that they had to come out here?
Oh, Mr. President, welcome to the show.
We are the good liars, and we are going to tell the truth. Trust us.
We are very excited to welcome our friend Yasmin Vasugian, MSNBC anchor and correspondent, who was there on January 6th, who has her unique perspective on all the stuff we just talked about. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we're happy to have you.
Let's just start. Anytime. Let's just like hit.
Yeah.
Anytime you want to come here and talk about January 6th, you will, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So from the day, January 6th, you were reporting there, and you made it all the way to the Capitol there, and when you think about it, just when somebody mentions January 6th, what's the first thing that comes to you? To mind.
I've been working a lot on this piece about the January 6th timeline, and I had to like reread the indictment all over again. And I actually thought it was so amazing to think about like what was happening behind the scenes while we were all on the streets, like awaiting this thing to go down, like the phone calls that were being made by Rudy Giuliani in the early hours of January 6th to senators to ensure that they would stop the certification process, the phone call between Donald Trump and Mike Pence, in which Mike Pence was like, yeah, I can't do that. That's not constitutional.
Wild.
All of this buildup, right? And Giuliani was the opening act. We knew at that point Rudy Giuliani was not doing well psychologically.
Right.
Because we had already seen Four Seasons Landscaping. We had already seen all of these press conferences, right?
The dripping of the hair dye.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like now you look back and they were the opening act of Donald Trump with the ellipse. And I remember like, the crowds that were gathering, it was so insane. I couldn't believe how many people were there.
What time did you get there to the Capitol, just so we can kind of picture when this was all happening?
Nancy Pelosi gaveled it at 1:03 p.m.
Okay.
To be exact, because I literally just reread the indictment. Nancy Pelosi gaveled in at 1:03 p.m. in the afternoon to start the certification process. By 1:30, I think, they had called recess because of what was happening outside. But I remember standing outside the Capitol and being like, guys, nothing's like going to happen at this moment. It really doesn't seem too insane. Let's make our way over there so I can pee. I'm really cold. We need to go find like a Panera or whatever or something, or a Cozy or one of those sandwich shops. I just need to use the bathroom and like warm my hands a little bit, and then we'll be right back. I remember we looked at our phone, and then I remember looking up and being like, wait a minute, what is happening? And we saw people starting to hang from the scaffolding, because remember, they were set up for the inauguration, which was so insane to me, because I'm like, oh my God, in 2 weeks, then candidate to be President Biden is going to be sworn in as the next president of the United States. And right now, protesters that would eventually become insurrectionists that would storm the Capitol are hanging from those risers where Bill Clinton will sit, where George W. Bush will sit, where secretaries of state will sit, former secretaries of state will sit. I mean, where Donald Trump did not sit on Inauguration Day.
Right. So you ran over to Cozy, and then by the time you
By the time I came back.
Oh, okay, that was enough for you not to go.
So how was your Caesar, your chicken Caesar wrap? Was it good?
And I came back, and Donald Trump was giving the message like, "We love you, go home." And I was like, "What did I miss?"
Yeah.
No. So we looked up and we saw them hanging from the like kind of scaffolding and people gathering at the front archway, and I'm like, "Oh, something's happening. We're not going to the bathroom." It was one of the most surreal experiences of my life. And I've served. I haven't served overseas. I'm not a veteran, but I've reported overseas in conflict zones. I had never gotten so many like text messages and emails from people like worried for my life and my safety. And what was so surreal was that I was in Washington, D.C., a place that I lived for many years as a reporter. A place that I called home.
Is this where you were kind of set up? We found this picture from the day, right? So you were really like just right there at the bottom of the Capitol. So great hat.
That was the good thing about masks, though, is like it kept you warm. When you wore the mask, it like kept your face and nose and everything warm. It was actually kind
of
nice.
In all of your own
and it also let everybody know who wasn't with them, who wasn't on their side. So that was
that
was convenient too. If you were media or a non-media person,
I didn't wear any like insignia or anything to identify myself as a press person. Besides the fact that I had a camera and two burly security men with me.
We had an experience where we walked along the side after they'd stormed the Capitol, and we got surrounded by Trump supporters because they saw that I had a microphone in my pocket and they were calling us fake news and making like they wanted to beat us up. Did you experience anything like that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. No. I mean, I was talking to a lot of militia guys and like kind of trying to ingratiate myself to them. And I do it in a way where I'm like, oh, you know, like, where are you from? And oh, I love Florida. And
yeah.
But just like,
I have the same bulletproof.
It's always
that's
Florida.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know why. I got lucky. Not only did we get lucky, we talked to a lot of militia guys that were in the Capitol and then came out. I mean, I was like seeing guys coming out and pouring milk on their face because they've been tear gassed, wiping their eyes.
I remember we saw the guy who was later in a lot of photos on the Senate floor with a hole in his cheek because he'd been shot by a rubber bullet. That was our first sign that things had really gone off the rails.
At one point, one of these militia guys said to me, "We're coming back with our guns." And I remember saying that on air and I was like, this is what I'm being told. And I'd mentioned this earlier when I was walking up Constitution Avenue, I was talking to a lot of people that were really angry, but that were like very kind of innocuous, like normal people that you might like sit next to at a bar in a restaurant, meet when you're visiting your in-laws, your grandparents, you know, like I remember talking to this older couple, very nice older couple. And I walked up Constitution Avenue with them and they were convinced that it's on Mike Pence and he could justify or he could not certify the election. And I said to them, that's not constitutionally possible. Like that he cannot do that. And they said, well, you know, it's on his responsibility. And then they kind of like started to get more agitated. But like, I was so amazed by the kind of diversity of people. And when I say diversity, I mean more age diversity and like socioeconomic diversity. I don't mean when it comes to race, there was not diversity in that regard as much, but like socioeconomic and age diversity that I saw amongst a lot of the like protesters and insurrectionists, that to me was like, was pretty shocking and fascinating. And it was just amazing to me that it was happening in this country.
What information were you getting at that point? Like as the mob was storming the Capitol, so, did you get any of like this fake news misinformation from people?
Well, I mean, I think Trump did have a plan to go to the Capitol. He said he was going to. And we know that now because of all the interviews by the House investigation and by the January 6th committee and by Jack Smith. Like he had an intention of wanting to go. And then the Secret Service is like, you're not going.
Well,
like,
how is that actually going to work? Was he going to take a motorcade there? Or was he going to walk like he's on Selma Bridge and like walk down there like arm in arm?
Nobody
like,
actually what is this walked it. Well, and, but that's like in theme with his entire presidency.
Yeah, you know exactly. I mean? Like, that I'll be there seems with like you. What like, he would think right.
yeah.
would
yeah,
happen.
Like, yeah, like I'll be there with you. I'll march in solidarity with you. Like right. I am you. You know, like I live how you live. I like, I think how you think.
We are all billionaires.
Get us all from his golden throned.
Yeah. I don't want to touch you. I don't want to be near right. you. I don't want to touch yeah. your skin.
It's like,
I,
yeah, this is yeah. all in line with, it's all very typical and like and in line with his presidency. And so we had a WhatsApp group, which was actually for the most part coming through. I would get kind of messages and or I would see other crews of mine that would say, hey, like, here's what's happening on the east side. Here's what's happening on the west side. And so that's kind of how I knew. But it was like so in the moment. That was the news. Like we were the news.
What did you think about the 3 hours of silence from him after they stormed the Capitol?
Going back to the indictment, it talks a lot about what he was doing in that time period. And much of what he was doing in that time period was he was watching. He was watching it all unfold. And he had people coming up to him repeatedly, people that he, quote unquote, trusted, saying, you got to get him, that you got to do something. He had people calling him. McCarthy called him from inside the Capitol saying, call them off. But by the way, McCarthy, who like has stood by him through and through after it all went down.
Visited him right afterwards.
Exactly. Right? I think he wanted to show how many people loved him and show the world that people supported him. It's not surprising. I mean, I did not expect Donald Trump to get up and sit and call them off immediately. Like, it's just not in his DNA. It's not how he acts. He waited to the very end when he recognized like lives were being lost. And like, if it kept going, it would become even worse for him. He knew what was happening. And a part of him was like, see world, people love me. And I think a part of him was also like, see Donald, people love me.
He's just like looking at himself in the mirror the whole time. Like, I'm good enough. Like, I'm smart enough. And people like,
you're right.
Like, that's not, that's the truth. Like, if anybody is to assess who Donald Trump is and how he acts, that is who he is. You know, it's kind of like this narcissistic way about him in which, and how he needs this for his own kind of well-being and self-confidence. And that's why he kept going, right? It was purely about Donald Trump on that day. I think the surreal part too was like, I don't know if you guys experienced this, but at night when it was all over, it finally seemed like they were ready. National Guards troops and DC Metro and CPD and there were barricades and everything. And I was like, if only it looked like this 12 hours right. ago. And this is a discussion that was had like multiple times on public stage when they looked into the security failures, was like the CPD was completely ill-prepared, right? Like the CPD didn't have enough men on the ground. They didn't have enough like security in place. They didn't have enough barricades in place. And there were threats. They knew the threats. And there had been threats before and it hadn't followed through. That was on them, right? So there's been multiple kind of discussions about who caused, right? So like, did Donald Trump incite the insurrection? Was he the reason everybody marched in the Capitol and invaded the Capitol and got inside and all this stuff? And then there's but why wasn't it protected, right? Why weren't people prepared? No doubt the next, you know, time that a president or an election is certified, just watch the security. I mean, because we've seen it since then. Every time there's any kind of thing happening at the Capitol, they have trucks and tanks and everything lined up and barricades put up. I mean, and now they've gone overboard. But it always happens this way. It's like they get ill-prepared. They're ill-prepared. Something terrible happens like this. And then they go overboard in the other direction.
If people come somewhere dressed in military fatigues and bulletproof vests and helmets, and they are not military, police, or anything like that, that is a warning sign. I wish that people just like took it seriously, because it seems so obvious to us being there. Like, these are people that want to protect themselves from getting hurt, because they're going to beat people up right now.
The president knew, according to the indictment, the president knew that people were armed. He had been told that there was munitions in the crowd, that there were guns in the crowd, there were people that had come armed and ready to fight. And that was early in the day. So like, you combine that, and you know, I mean, if you read that indictment, it kind of reads like a story, because you combine that with then what he started to watch unfold, and then how long it took to call them off, and then how he called them off, knowing kind of what they came to do, right? I mean, why would you come with arms?
And like, it's all because he couldn't deal with being a loser. That's it. Couldn't deal with the fact that he was a big loser, and then he just caused all that pain and suffering and got people killed.
But he lost. The amazing thing is, it just doesn't stop. Sometimes I'm like, are we the ones that are going crazy? Like,
I had that thought today about him. I'm like, is nope. this? Am I the?
It's him.
Am I out of touch with reality, or is it just half the country is? Totally,
but the amazing thing is, like, I think also something that I think about all the time. Like, now I'm getting all existential on you guys, and I'm totally sober.
No, it's good. But like, it's good.
But like,
we popped an edible.
You
before
showed up to this totally sober.
You didn't get the memo. Oh, we are tripping balls right now.
Bombed, yeah.
is like. With the framing of the Constitution, right? Like, there's so many like loopholes that Donald Trump has figured out. And, you know, you have all these like constitutional originalists that are like big Trump supporters, right? Like, they wear like their 1776 hats, and they like, a lot of them were at the Capitol.
They stormed the Capitol.
Yeah,
they love this country.
but you think back, they talk a lot about the founding fathers. It's like, the founding fathers never, like, there were so many things that they didn't write into the Constitution because they never thought the electorate would vote in to the White House someone like Donald Trump.
And if you saw this person incite an insurrection, that certainly they wouldn't be on the ballot and the favorite
again
to win the
yeah
next election.
Yeah.
I guess that was my point, is that some of these things that would seem based on reason to be obvious, but he's found these, I guess, loopholes. He's getting away with it. It seems like as much as humanly possible.
So right now I'm also doing a piece on who stood up to Donald, like who kept him from decertifying the election, right? Like the Bill Barrs who walked in the room were like, at the final moment, and was like, you're wrong. Chris Krebs, who was the head of election security essentially, and he was like, the election was safe and secure, and then Donald Trump fired him. Brad Raffensperger, Georgia Secretary of State, who was like, can't find you those 11,000 plus votes, you're wrong. All of these people, many of them Republicans, they were the ones that made sure our election was certified. If it were not for those individuals, if Raffensperger had decided not to do what he did and to listen to Donald Trump, if Governor Kemp had decided that Donald Trump was right and decided to believe the lie, like if Georgia Secretary of State, if all these people, like we could have been in a much different situation. Like, because of
what
these
a big
people,
party of enablers, and then a couple of them that
yeah
had to,
but like, because
stand
of
up
these
the end,
people, because of the Mike Pences of the world at the end of the day, these people who believe in the rule of law and the actual Constitution were the ones that saved the day. And if those people aren't in place, it could go in a completely different direction. So it actually really wasn't the system. I mean, part of it was the system, but it was the people, which I think is amazing.
So when Donald Trump wins in a landslide this year, and we're talking about all these people that were so courageous, you're writing these articles on them. You're basically just giving him a blueprint for who to arrest when he's elected.
If Donald
these
Trump
are the eight
is,
people.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm sure he has got a list. And he's just going to like.
Why? He doesn't seem vindictive. I don't see it.
I appreciate you sharing the story of your embarrassing moment on television. I also had an embarrassing moment on television. I was talking with DeVram and another host, and I tried to do a symbol like I'm crossing
my
fingers.
Oh, that was with me.
Yeah. And it looks like I'm flicking off the camera to end a great segment. I end it just by like flicking off the camera at the end of it. And I'm like so sincere, like, oh yeah, everything's good. And then we get a text from you being like, did you just flick me off? And then like whoever, like the producer was like, hey man, what was going on at the end there? And I was like, I did realize it as it was happening. Like, oh my God, I'm
it's
flicking
like you have
off
to be like, make
camera.
Sure this one is like real.
It doesn't
tough.
Make, yeah, I don't know.
That it's was a learning moment, right? I mean,
this would have been
next
the
time
way
you'll,
to do it.
Next time you'll get it just
it.
Right.
You just
do you remember how that moment unfolded?
You have to exaggerate your like, everything needs to be a little bit more exaggerated.
Well, I think this is actually a full circle moment here because I think we were talking about, it was the DC arraignment, and I think we were talking about how we hope there isn't going to be more violence with Donald Trump because of January 6th, and we talk about January 6th. And then I was like, yep, I'm fingers crossed it doesn't happen. And it's just, I'm flicking off the camera.
Instead, you were
the
like, F you. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself. Thanks for having me on. I was like, in my mind, it was playing in my mind like, this has been the long con to like get a childish prank in here. And then they wait till like the 12th time they're on and Jason's just flicking off the camera at the end of it. So I apologize for that. Again, I did feel bad. As if I do something funny, I want to know I'm doing something funny.
Are you guys going to the prime? Like, are you going to any of the primaries or are you not going? Cause it's just not really a primary anymore.
We went to Iowa. I mean, DeVram, you
Iowa,
know, gave
New
the
Hampshire.
Participation trophy, and we went to New Hampshire
as
well.
To DeSantis. That's right. I saw that.
So, yes.
And, we'll see. It's a much less wide open, fun state of affairs, as you just
It's like
referenced.
It's over.
It's just like, it's over. And
did you get ushered off by DeSantis' security when you did that? Participation
trophy? Was a lot of, he had a ton of security there. So I was kind of surprised I was able to walk up to him, but he had like definitely like some private security, also like the cops and I don't know, there were probably like 10, 12 security guys in the room and right outside. So I got a lot more time than I thought I would. I'll say that.
His wife seemed jazzed at first. She was like, oh,
yeah,
cool.
That's so fun.
And
yeah.
A little word for her husband who she bosses around all the time.
And then they were like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, the funniest part was DeVram did his thing, and I see him on the way out, and then I'm going in. And I go in and I stand next to them for a little bit, and then I try and do a thing, and it's up. Like, you're not going to get away with anything now. DeVram just did this big thing. And I say, like, one word, and a guy, like, just grabs me by the hood of my coat and just yanks me as hard as he can. Like, I'm like a cartoon character going backwards. If there is anything you want to plug or anything, please put it on. We're going to have an audience of at least my mom. My dad definitely won't be listening, but...
At Yasmin V on X and at Yasmin Vesugian on Instagram. I'll say it because I'm the TV person. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Boom. Thanks for coming
like
on.
That.
Nailed it. And I want to say thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. All right, we want to thank Yasmin for joining us here on The Good Liars Tell the Truth. That does it for this episode. But if you want some exclusive content, go to herohero.co/thegoodliars for content you can't get anyplace else. Thanks for listening, everybody.
America. The Good Liars Tell the Truth is produced by Aaron Mason, with new episodes releasing every Tuesday. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to us at thegoodliarspodcast@gmail.com.
A joke, is he right? USA.